Now I want to turn to our first interview guest this morning. Welcome, Lisa Thompson, our counsellor to the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Aaron. Oh, am I the first guest this morning?
Well, it's quite early.
It is quite early.
I don't like guests to arrive before I do.
Yeah.
I kind of need to get into the swing of it, I've discovered. Yeah.
Yeah, and
play
get
a bit
the
of music.
News, yeah, get the music playing, which is always, I love coming in here because, you know, we come in and the music's blaring and you feel like having a little bit of a boogie, you know, bust a move, show people yes. how great I am at dancing. Not, but it's always uplifting.
It's funny, our previous counsellor didn't do that.
Oh, well, you know, I always find it uplifting, you know, when you hear
the sure.
music blaring away, so I really appreciate it. How are you this morning anyway?
Oh, I'm good. I'm trying to get into my head all the different things that have been going on. Maybe we'll start with this one that just occurred to me when I woke up this morning. We need to talk about the Merrill Awards.
Yes, that's exactly right, the Merrill Awards.
I didn't know that one was coming. I remember watching the community board vote on it last year or discuss it, but
we actually, so we had the Merrill Awards, was it last week or the week before?
Two weeks ago now.
Myself and the community board, we thought we only had one vote, one choice. But actually, what we did find out was that I could have had one nominated a person, and then the community board and Councillor Turner as well for the Māori wards. But we did give out a Merrill Award to Sarah Johnson, actually, who has been a stalwart of supporting not only the Raglan Area School soccer, which you have for many, many years as well, soccer in general.
Oh, yeah, but she's going to be in it longer than I have.
Yeah, and, you know, her eldest is the same age as my daughter, Charlie, almost 23.
And my daughter, Andy,
and
as well.
So I think Sarah has been one of those people in the background that you never see, but always gets stuff done. And without her, you wouldn't have, you know, management of the different teams or baking or coordinating five-a-side or even further than that, you know, supporting young writers, getting young people up to writers' festivals, engaging with them in, you know, different festivals around Hamilton, you know, taking workshops on writing. So it extends even further than, you know, the sports. But also, I guess a little bit like a Margaret Dillon, is a person who involves herself in lots of things to support her children that then support many other children as well.
Has she helped out with Feed the Kids?
Yes, she has helped out. When she's able to, she helps out with Feed the Kids, which is on a Wednesday at Raglan Area School. And, of course, she wrote the book Enough. And a portion of sales from each book at that stage when it was first released went to support Feed the Kids, so $5 of each of those books. So she was a very humble, surprised recipient of the Merrill Award. And in fact, Mayor Jackie's executive assistant emailed me and said, Lisa, have we got the right Sarah? Because she doesn't think that she's the right person and that we must have made a mistake. So I said, leave it to me. I'll contact her. And she was like, Sarah was very surprised. And I think she was a little bit shy about it. But, you know, it's no mean feat when you've got someone who's been around for probably a good 20 years supporting young people, you know, from babies right through.
I thought she got it because she had four sons and no daughters. But
yeah. Hey, that was the backstory of it. No.
That was the four kids is why she's still kind of involved and still will be involved with the sports.
With sports and things
for a little
like
while longer,
and,
yes.
Yeah, and it's not just sports, but it's certainly supporting, you know, the wider Raglan Area School as well. And, you know, it's not an easy job.
Yeah. And I think did all the volunteer fire brigades in the district get a little something
did.
As well?
So Chiefy Frank Turner was there, which was great, accepting an award on behalf of the Raglan Volunteer Fire Brigade. So it was lovely to see him at the awards, as well as also their other recipients who were receiving awards from the fire service, as well as other community members from across the district.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's always great to celebrate the achievements of different people. And for me as councillor, you know, seeing people recognised from other communities and hearing what other communities are doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, like Raglan, there are so many passionate people who do a lot of mahi behind the scenes that we often don't hear about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Sarah's definitely one of them.
Yeah.
And obviously she would prefer to stay under the radar by the sounds of it.
I know. She was very humble.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's talk about long-term plan. This is the council's big spending plan, folks. And there's actually a consultation out at the moment. You can go along to the website, and you need to do it by the 20th. So you've got a couple of days.
You've got a couple of days, and really good news. When I was in council on Monday, we had already had 1,000 submissions back.
Oh, really?
So that's a lot of engagement. And
this is quite an easy one too, because it's the kind of they haven't written the plan yet, so it's the kind of pre-engagement, if you want to call it that. And so it's a fairly simple form to use.
And it's actually to get an idea of what you, our community, are thinking about. You know, whether it's our council services, it's our roading, it's our footpaths, all of that, plus our waste management services, our libraries, roading, our various properties, some of our halls, and there's even one that looks at the bridge here, the one lane car bridge, because we had earmarked about $200,000 in the
long-term. So there's a question about that in there, because I haven't gone through it all yet.
Yes, the Wainui Bridge, Whangaroa Raglan traffic light trial.
Yes,
that's so
going to be popular.
The bridge, the one lane car bridge. You know, we know that it operates on the courtesy system. So, you know, one end gives way to the other. And sometimes, you know, it doesn't happen so easily. But in general, I feel that the bridge works really well. It's more in the busy season, which is for a very short period. I live in Raglan West, so I choose the time that I go when it's in the Christmas New Year period. I'll go first thing in the morning or in the evening, as opposed to during the day or mid-morning or mid-afternoon. So there is a question on that, whether or not we should trial the traffic light system, which would be $200,000, which would be fully funded by council with no subsidy from NZTA, because we don't have a subsidy for that. So we're actually asking the question, do we, the ratepayers, feel that's a good investment? So that's one question.
Yeah.
And so I really encourage people to go on to our council shape. waikato district.govt.nz long-term plan engagement. So it would be awesome if we could get some more feedback on all of that. Yeah. We've actually got quite a lot of...
There's some stuff in there on waste I was looking at last night, and I was looking at... someone had asked the question of me, I can't remember who it was, but they said, how come it's only $1.50 for your sticker on your rubbish bag in the northern part of the district, but we pay nearly $5 a rubbish bag here? And I found the answer, because it's subsidised.
It's heavily subsidised.
Ironically, it's subsidised by the same ratepayers.
Yeah, but
they pay a standard fee and then a small sticker cost, whereas we just pay all our stuff on the bag / sticker cost.
Because it's a service provided by the contractor as well. So that isn't a council service as such, the blue bag.
Oh, yeah.
That is to Extreme Zero Waste, so that's a service that they provide. Our curbside collection is the service that we provide.
Okay, even though it's council, the same organisation as running both
there
services.
There are different streams of the mahi that each organisation, Waikato District Council and then Extreme Zero Waste. But the $5 a bag is actually the cost of the service. So it is being heavily subsidised, the stickered cost, and those are discussions that we're having, that we will be having about our waste services moving forward, because the sticker cost does not cover the cost of the service.
No, but the same ratepayers are still paying for it, because they pay the targeted rate for that service, which includes, I presume it includes.
It doesn't cover the
sticker cost. So is it coming out of the general rate?
Yeah, the sticker cost does not cover the service for that specific.
No, I know, but then there's a targeted rate for the ratepayers that have.
Oh, that
a
receive
pickup.
The curbside collection. Yes, that's right. But then the bag is another cost again.
Yeah.
So those we will need to review those costs of which we are doing now. So
yeah, my calculations was it came out of pretty much the same for Raglan or the northern part of the district. The only difference is our rubbish has further to go to get to the landfill.
Yeah, to Hampton Downs. So, but
Extreme still keeps the cost slightly lower than what it is in the northern part of the district.
And also, if you consider that the bags, the blue bags that we actually pay for, are from the soft plastic waste that's produced that we take up to Extreme Zero Waste as well. It's not ideal to have a plastic bag, but at least we're not producing new plastic to create the bag that goes into the landfill.
Yeah, and that was something they did do, that started that a few years ago.
Yeah, so that's really important to note. And we've also got, at the moment, our our proposed significance and engagement policy, which is out.
Can we talk about that in a minute? I still want to talk about the LTB.
Yes, certainly, sorry.
Because part of that, the big question, the thing we've been talking about for the last couple of years is how tight budgets have become for the council with what up against what ratepayers can pay. And there's a question in this LTP consultation about what do you think are the most important council services. And what ones would you suggest we cut? And I don't want to cut any of them. Like, when I look at all of them, knowing what I know about council and what they do, there's very little there that is cuttable, in my opinion. Maybe council could be more efficient on the inside. Some people say that. I just don't know. But
that's why we're going out to the community, Aaron, to try and get a gauge of, well, for affordability, what are the services that you do want? And there are people who have spoken to me who have said we need to cut our cloth. We need to actually really think, do we need the libraries open 5 days a week? Could we shorten those? All sorts of things have come out. I haven't seen what people have fed back into in this process, obviously. But they are really tough discussions that we need to have. And is it that people just want roading and rubbish? Water provision, you know, the three waters provision, I don't know, but this is our opportunity for that pre-engagement that will help shape what we go out with next year for those harder conversations with the LTP.
And I get that the council has to ask these questions, but I don't want the discussion to ignore the fact that the pressure on councils at the moment is not because of councils, it's because of wider economic issues. Because we see down in Wellington, there's a headline yesterday about, are they going to sell their airport or are they going to have to sell some other land? Why are they selling land? Like,
if
you have to sell the family silver to survive, something's gone wrong. Our council is asking that question too. Shall they sell some land?
Because the land that we've looked at for sale is land that we don't actually use. So it's not...
Did you notice where there were three examples in that press release that came out of land that could be sold, and they were all in our poorer communities in the district. I noticed that, like Narawahia, Huntley, and Meremere. You probably didn't see the press release, and that would have
I haven't seen the press release, and we've really thought long and hard about those parcels of land and the benefit that they have to the community or not, and would it be better to reinvest whatever we sell back into our communities. And I think it's been really well considered. It's not just, oh, let's sell the family silver, because council has pockets of land all over the place that in some instances have no value. They might have value to the landowner who is next door to it. It might have value to another organisation, but doesn't add value to our wider services that we provide. So I really support the sale of land, providing that it's not going to be utilised by the community, you know, that it could be a park or that it could be utilised for something else. But it has been really well thought out by a strategic property.
I'm certainly not saying that council hasn't thought about it. I'm just saying that in the wider discussion, we need to recognise that there's other forces at work, and it's not just a matter of and council trying is, to cut its cloth all the time.
That's exactly right. And also, Aaron, I was reading an article, and I can't remember where, I think it was the day before yesterday, is the realisation that we're not a wealthy country. We're not. We may desire really high quality, but we actually don't have the resources to fund that. And that is a reality that we have to look long and hard at. And people might go, oh, yeah, council wastes money. And that you're absolutely entitled to that opinion and to that belief. But we're not wealthy, and so we really have to look at what it is that we want. And I've said it before, do we want gold standard, or is it that we are going to have a plated, you know, level of service? So we're trying to go out to see, to ask our communities what it is that they really want. And when you look at it, people, you know, do you want less work done in our parks and reserves? Do you not want upgrades in playgrounds? Shall we stop investment or putting aside money for upgrades for skate parks? Will we forget about maintaining sports grounds? Will we not have walkways in public, in, you know, council reserves? Those are all the questions.
Have staff been telling, I'm trying to think of people who might have been in council for a very long time or working in council for a very long time, are they able to say whether government requirements, like the government gives certain responsibilities to councils, has that increased dramatically over the last 20
it
years?
It has.
So that's part of the problem too.
Even in my short time,
no way of getting more money to fulfill
those
services.
Yeah, well, in my short time in council, Aaron, I've seen that the pressures on council and the expectations with water quality, with changes in legislation, with requirements around three waters provisions, it's been massive. And, you know, to get your head around the volume of change and the pace at which it has come at local government is significant. And if you, I mean, I can't even keep up most of the time with the changes. You just, sometimes I feel as a territorial authority that you're like just treading water, because you're trying to engage with your communities. You're trying to have the best outcomes for your communities with the resources that you have. But you're also having to respond to the requirements of central government and changes to legislation and to acts and to policies. And so hence why you see almost a fatigue in community engagement. You know, when we're looking at our policies, our bylaws, it has a huge impact on our staff, and then it has a huge impact on the decision making for us as councillors, because there's a huge amount that we have to consider and then make decisions on. So it's
and on top of this, we've set that as a base.
And then we've got
our baseline
affordability. Then we've got infrastructure that needs upgrades.
Well, I want to come to the three waters thing, because I tried to ask the mayor the question and she didn't give a clear answer. But we already know we have an affordability crisis for councils to do what they normally do. The government has made a rule that CCOs, council controlled organisations, which will do our three waters in the future, we'll be able to have increased, they've increased their debt limit, but that means an increased debt load, increased payments. I mean, surely.
And that will come back to the ratepayer.
That's going to come back to the ratepayer. Like, we're already at a point the ratepayer can't afford the services that there are. And our wastewater rate is, targeted rate is bigger than our general rate. Like, this is a huge thing. Like, is the council, is the mayor saying back to the government, what you've come up with is not a good idea? Because I don't think she did. She sounded like she just listened to what the minister had to say and tried to.
Well, as councillors, we have been very clear that, you know, this is unaffordable, you know, but we have to do what is required, you know,
and by legislation.
Yeah, and we have to make decisions, and we have to think about how can we do this best that we can for our ratepayers, and we know that it's for many in our communities, it's already unaffordable. You know, some people are paying $140 a week on their rates, You know, that's a heck of a lot of money. Some people are paying $80, because you remember that if your capital value of your house also determines a major chunk of your general rates as well. You know, so people, depending on where you are, it's a heck of a lot of money that are going to paying your rates. I know that. Yeah, and I don't have an answer for that. And I know that we have to do the work that we need to do, whether it's providing the provision of our three waters, our wastewater, our freshwater, our stormwater, our roading. And then there's the expectations from communities even here wanting safe crossings on roads. But, you know, that comes at a cost. It's, you know, where will we pick and choose what it is that we're going to support for the greater good? Even the investment into our footpaths, which we know that many people want footpaths, but we don't have the money. It will all be local share, which will be, local share means the money that comes from our rates.
Yeah.
You know, because now we have had confirmation of what central government will be giving us for our roading. Is much less than what we had requested, and it's taken out all safety provision in that. So, you know, we are really, this isn't an excuse, folks. This is the reality. And so that's why it's really important that you engage in this process for the pre-engagement around a long-term plan and how we can shape that when we come out to re-engage. And that's where the rubber will hit the road around our rates increases, because our rates won't stay the same. There will be rates increases.
And like the council has to do that. I want to see a national level discussion about this. But all we're getting from the media at the moment is this finger pointing.
All we're getting is kicking a ball or blaming, you know, even watching the minister for local. Well, even looking at the minister for local government and the prime minister talking about Wellington, as if somehow all of a sudden the Wellington waters, the underinvestment is the responsibility of the current
well, they just don't like her because she's not one of their people. But
yeah, the current council that sit there. But it is long-term underinvestment from both local government and central government, and it's not limited just to Wellington. It is nationwide.
It's not just that, and this is what people need to understand. It's actually the entire Western world has had this underinvestment in council services.
So that's why we need to have the really open and honest discussions about what it is that we can really afford, what communities actually want. And I agree with you, Aaron, all of the all of the headings that are in that consultation document are really important.
Yeah, so we're talking about the long-term. If you go to the council website, you can have your say at the pre-engagement for the long-term spending plan that's coming into effect next year. This is a biggie, this one, and you can go and have a look at some of the, there's more to it than we've discussed, but we've got all that. But we should move on as well.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Because you brought it up. The significant, I've written a SIG policy here. What was that for?
Significant engagement policy.
Right, okay.
So it's another piece of work that is open now. Until the 11th of November. And so this is how we as council engage with our communities on really important decisions. And we want your thoughts on the changes that we've proposed to that. What is significant? You know, is it a curbside waste collection? What is it? And that determines what we go out and engage on when we, you know, to inform our decision-making. So
is it also about, so it's about, like people often say, oh, council doesn't listen, and this is about how council listens?
Well, yeah, it is. So it's like our long-term plans, bylaws and other plans, and because these things require us to do consultation by law, for other things, council considers the significance of those decisions to decide if community engagement or consultation is needed. So you can help us in how we determine the significance of decisions or proposals, and actually how you would like us to engage with you on different types of decisions or proposals. So we really need to hear what you think might be important to you. So
is this about where you draw the line? Like, obviously you consult about rates increases. You could consult about what day the guys mow the lawn down Bow Street.
Yeah.
But you don't.
But we don't, because that's not significant. But, you know, what is significant to a community? Is it not mowing our reserves anymore? Is that significant? If we made a decision not to do that anymore, would we consult with you, or would or wouldn't we consult with you? So it's finding out what would what the community wants to hear about and what they don't give a rat's about, really.
Couldn't get our councillor to say rat's ass on the radio. Okay, so that's that. So this is a new policy, or is this
no? This is a policy that we've had for a long time.
Because there was a thing at the last community board meeting. There was talk about the how the Greenslade Road community wanted a natural playground, and community board member Ross Wallace seemed frustrated with the fact that the community wasn't just going along with what the council offers as its two solutions, and wanted to kind of close down that much consultation. And the chief financial officer, Alison Diaz, said, "No, we've got a policy that says
we can't just
do that because we're." Well, she didn't say these words, but it was kind of like, "We can't do that just because we're annoyed at those people."
Yeah, and that we think it's too much work. So, but it's also determining as council, because we've got finite resources, so we could engage on everything. People could say we want engagement on everything you do.
What do they call that? Paralysis by analysis.
Yeah, but also it'll be paralysis by lack of resources because we can't realistically do that on every aspect of work that council undertakes. But I think it's having, you know, when I think about it, and it's over and above this engagement policy, engagement and significance policy, is that council utilising the intimate knowledge that, you know, community boards, community committees and council laws have of their communities, and asking, hey, look, we're thinking of doing this work. Do you think it requires us to put out comms about it? You know, because what staff may not see as a big deal could be a massive deal, like a change of service to curbside rubbish collection in a local context.
From their perspective, admin perspective,
It might be desktop, you know, analysis of, it's only going to affect X amount of ratepayers. It's no big deal. We'll just change it. But actually, it will have a significant impact. So it's finding that balance between a policy and also having that energy to say, hey, councillor, yada, yada, what do you think? Will we need to do a local engagement on this? And we could say, yeah, absolutely, because if we don't, we're going to get kicked in the butt because we didn't consider it.
Yeah, okay.
So it's finding that balance. Anyway, sorry.
No, that's all right. No, it's got to be clear what that's about. Now, I'm looking at the agenda for the community board. There's pictures of work going on over on at the soccer Papahua. Fields as part of the Solve the Flooding Problem program.
I went over and had a look.
It's a big hole in the ground at the moment. But
oh, no, that's covered now.
Actually, because these pictures are usually a week or two old,
No. I went over yesterday and had a look. They've finished that work. So what they're doing at the far end, closest to the beach end, they were putting in these sheeting, this massive metal sheets, 10 metres long, and banging them into the ground. And that's where the pump will be nestled in there.
Oh,
it's massive. You should go down
to stop it flooding inside of it.
It's called sheet piling.
Because it'll probably be, like, we're looking at water in this trench here. That's probably sea level. In fact, I'm surprised it's so low.
They're going down 4 meters, Aaron.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So they're going below sea level.
Yeah, I don't know if that is sea. I don't know if that's sea level, but I couldn't tell you because
it depends on the time of day, right?
Yeah,
on the tide.
I wasn't there, but that's all covered now. But now it's going into the park. It's quite incredible the amount of work. But right down the end, so see that top picture.
We're looking at an aerial picture, folks, and we've got where
the right hand corner.
Yeah.
Well, that is where the sheet piling was going in yesterday, and there was still like the metal that I could see that was out of the ground was at least 3 meters high. Oh, sorry, was at least 3 meters high. So it
So that's the far corner. If you stand at Joe's Takeaways, at the front of Joe's Takeaways, it's often the right-hand direction, the far corner
as you,
there.
If you were to walk over to the beach from the soccer field to the pillbox.
And that soccer field, you certainly couldn't play soccer on it at the moment. That's where the work's happening.
But they're doing a great job.
And luckily it's summertime. Not luckily. I'm sure they planned not to do this.
Oh, yes. They're hoping to be finished by December, and obviously getting a lot of this work done before the long weekend, next weekend. But the guys, GT Civil, are going along at a rate of knots. They've moved along, and they're doing a long line of work that they've already started. They've started doing the big trenching and putting in. I said to Leanne, that looks like, is that going to be an underground swimming pool? Because it looked like, you know, this big cassette that they were putting in the ground yesterday. And so they're doing, I'm not an engineer, but A, they're working at a rate of knots, but B, they appear to be doing a really good job.
So obviously this is an investment for the future for the sports field, well, whatever happens on those fields and the campground. Like, despite global warming, we expect to still be on that site for quite a while.
Well, the campground has, in the last probably 3 years, 3 to 4 years, has oh, even more than that probably, in recent years particularly, we've had significant flooding, which has had an impact on the camp, and particularly to those people who have their caravans that are long-termers within the park, because we have our leaseholders that are there that have their caravans there. They've been flooding in those areas, and they've been quite significant.
Yeah. A few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, there was a really bad winter, and I remember
Cyclone Gabriel. There's been, and
that's just the one I remember.
Since then, there's been significant flooding. So this is to address that and hopefully give us longevity, whatever that might look like, for the running of the camp, and it has been at a significant cost. So I'd like to say
is this why it took so long to get to this point? Because you had to put it through like an LTP 3 years ago or something?
No, because it's not ratepayer funded. So it's not all of this work, including that mitigation on the soccer field, is paid for by the camp. So none of this has come out of cost of the ratepayer. That's why, Aaron, we're getting this work done, because it's been funded by the camp.
Right, okay.
So at a significant cost. So the social benefit and the reciprocity between the business of the camp and the wider community, like the pump track that was funded by camp, again, is at no cost to the ratepayer.
Well, I pass my congratulations on to the camp board then. I know you're
Thank
on it.
You.
So this is the best thing I've seen that will solve the flooding problem. I guess we have to wait to see ultimately, but
It's a massive piece of work, but there are no guarantees on how long or how, because we don't know what the weather events are going to set upon us, but we are hoping that, you know, if there is flooding there, it will be able to dissipate much quicker than it has in the past, where it has actually sat and where it has become a little sub swimming pool paddle boarding.
It was a lake.
Yeah, a little lake. So
and I know that well. One thing I would say is, I mean, we always think these are signs of global warming. I do know, like back in the 80s.
And it is so close
to... It used to flood. Yeah, and in fact, what used to happen was in the 80s when they started the junior soccer club, the teams from Hamilton got to the point, they're like, you guys need to sort your field out, because every time we come out at high tide, it was boggy. So they got some diggers, and you wouldn't get away with this now. They got some diggers and they dug out the sandbank and scattered 20 centimetres of sand across the pitch. So it didn't get boggy at high tide anymore.
Yeah.
But that's how close it is to the water over there. So I just want to make that point.
Well, they've gone down 4 metres in their trenching. Yeah. So they've gone down 4 metres. And then
that's thorough.
the sheet pilings, even, they're like 10 metres. Each sheet is 10 metres is my understanding. So, and that's down to camp management, that good financial management, that we were able to respond really quickly.
There's
to
There's been sufficient surplus over the last few years to fund it. Yeah,
be able to do that, and still to continue to invest in other parts of the camp.
Okay, what else have we got on the... wharf repairs, that's done now, isn't it? The wharf.
Yeah, that's done. And yes,
the walkway's done.
Doesn't it look fantastic?
The Wee Nera walkway we're talking about.
Yeah, the Wee Nera walkway between the walk bridge and the jetty at the bottom of Bow Street. It's looking fantastic. It's beautiful and wide. I had been sceptical about the balustrading. But it actually looks good, and it doesn't feel like the view is blocked or hindered as such.
No. And then there's what's happening at the – because that's technically the northern end. At the southern end, where you go around to where the fire station is, has work been done on that at some time? What do we know about that?
I can't comment on that. I don't know about when that work will be done. And that's another obviously consideration for cost as well. I'll follow up with you.
Because harking back to our other discussion, there might be a time where we say, okay, we can't afford to have two access ways to that bridge. It's cheaper to have one. I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, that's exactly
it's
right.
It's not what I'm, because we've got, it's not my idea.
But the thing is, we've got a really great access way, and you know that we can still access the other part. And I think, unfortunately, when we do better by our footpaths and things like that, that becomes a common expectation that continues because we've been really fortunate that the Papahua, you know, that's a connection to the fantastic footpath at Papahua now, you know, and so people expect that.
But that was government funded.
It is, but, you know, people expect that to be everywhere.
Mm. Yeah. Were you part of the attempt to resolve the Manu Bay breakwall process? Were you at the meeting where?
Yep.
So I've heard sides of this story from people involved with boating and people involved with surfing. The council, somewhere there was a statement that because they couldn't get resolution amongst the parties, just nothing is going to change. This is my understanding.
Well,
what happened there?
Understanding is that in order to do anything with the breakwall, we would need resource consent. And in my basic layman's term, in order to get resource consent, we need consensus between the parties involved. And if we're unable to get that consensus, we would be unable to get resource consent. That's in a nutshell. And it means that we will be unable to undertake that breakwall work as envisaged by the boating community.
Yes.
So it would probably be, in terms of getting the most accurate response, it would be good to get Glyn Morgan, who has oversight, and I'm happy to come in and kōrero while he's here as well, on that. So there's no... At the end of the day, I think whatever decision would be made around the breakwall, there wouldn't be a happy consensus as such.
No, I'd happily predict that myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And that would always be tricky.
Yeah, it was an acrimonious issue from some parties.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's park all that. I've got another interview to do later. Oh, I want to reiterate this thing about if you're concerned about how council spends money, now is your chance to get in early.
Now is the chance. Well, you're actually getting in late because it closes on the 20th of this month.
Oh, late for this.
I'm reminding you late, folks.
Yeah.
But we have put it out there. I've put it on the notice board and so on and so forth. But get in there. So you're not late. You're just on time, providing you get it in before the 20th. Well, before 5 o'clock on the 20th. So,
Go to the council website.
Then we will have another opportunity in the main part of the long-term plan consultation, which will come out next year. This particular consultation helps us shape those next steps of what we come out with.
Yeah. So that's, I just Google Shape Waikato.
Shape Waikato, and we've got all of the options there.
Yeah. All right, Lisa, thanks heaps for coming in.
Thanks, Aaron. Keep up the excellent work, and everyone have a fantastic weekend in our little slice of paradise.
All right, thanks for coming in.